Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll get an update from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, called MACV. Check in on the Minnesota Veterans for Veterans organization and get an update from the Command Sergeant Major of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
During the month of February, we celebrate Black History Month. This is a time for us to recognize a rich cultural heritage. There are memorable moments and individuals in Black history, which are also memorable moments in military history. In the late 1800s, the Buffalo Soldiers, an Army cavalry regiment, was known for its courage and discipline as they patrolled the Western Plains and fought in the Spanish-American War. During World War II, the Tuskegee Airmen, a group of African-American aviators, took the fight to the Nazis with an impressive level of success and bravery. Our Minnesota military shares a story with Black history as well. The storied 16th Battalion, a group of patriots who, in defiance of prejudice and an ill-advised policy, volunteered to keep their community safe during the First World War. Led by Captain Clarence Wigington, the 500 members of the 16th Battalion served Minnesota with distinction as the Minnesota Home Guard. It is in this spirit of patriotism, selfless service, and duty that the men and women of the Minnesota National Guard serve today. And it is this spirit that makes your Minnesota National Guard strong and always ready.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the beginning of the show, we're going to talk today to the President and CEO of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, Neil Leutholt. He's also a major general in the Minnesota National Guard. And General, good to have you back in the studio today.
It's very good to be back with you, Tom. Thank you.
Sure. There might be some of our listeners out there that haven't listened to when we've chatted in the past, but you spent a good portion of your life in the military.
I just went past 34 years, Tom, and that includes some enlisted service and the rest of it as a commissioned officer.
A good thing you started at age 10.
Yeah, it's a good thing I started as soon as they'd let me, actually, Tom.
And, sir, your position right now, you're the Deputy Adjutant General to General Jensen, and you've been a division commander. You've had quite a career.
It's been a good run, Tom. I've been very fortunate to be in a position to help soldiers most of my entire career, especially the time I spent as a division commander, and I learned a great deal, right? I think you learn in every single assignment in life, and it's all sort of maybe set me up for where I am right now.
In general, we've talked a bit over the years, and a couple of years ago, you had a choice to make. Either you are also an attorney, you have a legal license, correct?
Indeed, I do, yeah. I'm legally trained, Tom. I wouldn't say I'm an attorney.
I haven't practiced law too much, sir.
That's a fact.
But a couple of years ago, you had to kind of make a decision. Am I reaching the end of my military career? Should I go into business, or do I want to go into some foundation work? What is it that you'd like to do with your life following the transition from the military? And lo and behold, there was a position available for the MACV, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and you chose to go that route. Still taking care of the troops, sir?
That's what I'm working on, Tom. I was a fortunate combination of circumstances that had that vacancy occurring about the time I was leaving, and it occurred to me that I might still be able to serve in the fashion that I was, helping soldiers, but in this case more than just soldiers, but mostly helping people in need, right? If there's an opportunity for me to help somebody and that I had the ability to do it and the means to be able to do it, I thought I ought to do it, and that's what brought me here, and it's been a good fit so far, Tom.
So, sir, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, you're there to help veterans, but specifically you want to help eliminate veterans' homelessness.
That's exclusively what we deal in, Tom. Homeless veterans are in crisis, and think in crisis is about to be homeless. Last year, of the 1,400 veterans that we provided direct financial assistance to, 47% were actually homeless at the time that we came in contact with them. You know, it's our mission is to end veteran homelessness. We believe that no American veteran should be homeless because no American should be homeless. And if we can't solve veteran homelessness first, we'll just never solve homelessness overall. And so we stay laser focused on that particular aspect.
We're speaking with Neil Leutholt, who is the president and CEO of the MACV, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, it's a question that I've wondered about for years. What type of circumstances cause our veterans to become homeless?
Tom, I get asked that a lot, and I'm wondering if sometimes people think there might be a special set of circumstances or a different set. And certainly individual service circumstances and combat deployments, et cetera, can have an effect. But at the end of the day, veterans find themselves homeless in the same manner that so many other people find themselves homeless. Bad financial decisions, a long-term struggle with family/marital challenges, chemical addiction, physical disabilities, things that make it very difficult for you to sustain employment. And certainly without employment, you're not going to be able to afford a stable place to live. And so it's the same across the spectrum. It actually is, Tom.
So, sir, it's kind of a series of things that might happen to a veteran that cause him to spiral into maybe he lost his job, and then maybe he lost his home, and maybe he lost his car, and then the next thing you know, you're homeless, and what are you going to do?
That's a big part of it. It can be a series of spiraling events, but we just helped a Vietnam veteran who had been, so he had been good all the way up to 71 years old, right? And then here's what happens. You get cancer, you have to go in for chemotherapy. Your boss doesn't actually fire you for that, but he doesn't call you back for the next shift. You lose your job at the same time as your wife gets sick. And guess what? You can't make your mortgage payment. And then you get a notice from the company that you've got to leave. That happens all within 30 days if you're really unlucky. So there is the spiral circumstance, but there's also those situations that just sort of flare up, much like a brush fire.
Uncontrollable events.
Pretty much uncontrollable events. That's right. Most people don't try to get themselves into a homeless predicament, Tom. However it happens to them.
Well, sir, you've been working on this a couple of years now with MACV and going into your third year. How do you, when you find a homeless veteran, what are the steps you have to take to get them stabilized and back? Is it all surrounding a door? We need a door to close. We need a place to live. How do you help them?
It is almost all surrounding that. That's correct. The first step, it's called, the national model is called Housing First, which means we ought to get you in a stable place to live before we can do any further assistance. So it's pretty difficult to work on your chemical addiction. It's pretty difficult to work on your physical disability if you're living out of the back of your car, your fish house, your brother's garage, or any of the number of places people find themselves. So our case managers work with veterans, develop a housing plan and a sustainability plan, right? That's the key here. If you can't sustain your rents when you're done working with us, it's just going to lead to one more eviction and one more credit, Nick, and one more challenge on your record. So into a stable place, figure out how you're going to sustain your income, and then put you on a path towards long-term stability.
Sir, would that also include removing obstacles, such as if you've got an alcohol problem or you got a drug problem, maybe you got some legal issues that prevent you from driving? There are little pieces that are probably different for each veteran.
They are different for each veteran, but a number of the pieces are the same, and you covered most of them. You should add to that credit challenges and challenges with past evictions, and you have sort of this continuum of issues that have to be addressed by case managers after the initial decision to try to figure out the housing solution.
So, in general, once you get a hold of a veteran and start working them through the process of getting in a stable and safe place to live, getting them a job, removing some legal issues, is there a recidivism rate, or how many of them go back?
Right. So we're building some better measures for that so that we can really be able to dice that up much better than we can right now. But I will tell you this from our 2018 data, 82% of the new veterans we helped were one time touch. We will not see those 82% again. 18%, however, our past clients, people that we've maybe helped a couple of years ago, people that we maybe helped last month and we're going to have to help next month, people maybe that we helped with rent one time and now we've got to help them with their car or their job or their legal issue this time. And so at the macro level, you could look at that as the rate that sort of is still in the homeless continuum.
So, sir, I would guess part of this is that the homeless veteran has to want to get back on their feet, has to want to get some stability in their life. Are there some of them that maybe don't?
Well, that's an interesting thing, Tom, because having, you know, most recently commanded a division, I'm used to having people do the thing that I want them to do. But you're right. Some veterans don't want help. But I don't think that means they want to be homeless. That just means maybe they don't want the thing that we're offering them right now. And such is the case, so that we're developing additional tools. So there are more options and more opportunities to be able to present to homeless veterans, but they do have to try along the way. I can't make somebody take a check. I can't make somebody go into an apartment. I can't make somebody leave their current hovel from under the bridge. And so the single most difficult thing our case managers have to do is to develop initially enough trust with the veteran so that they'll agree to the solution that's being offered.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about MACV here in Minnesota and the efforts underway to prevent veterans' homelessness. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking today with Neil Leutholt, who is the president and CEO of MACV, which is the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And his duty, his mission there is to eliminate veterans' homelessness. And sir, two questions on that. First, we started at the end of the last segment. We were talking about my thought that there might be veterans that are homeless because of their attitude. Maybe they're not thinking right. Maybe they think there's no place I'm going to be happy, and they're resistant to your help. How do you deal with those guys?
It's a difficult proposition, and it's especially difficult, Tom, for the case managers who get to know people, who work with them day to day, who start to build relationships with them, and then watch veterans who turn down help. And so what you do is you try to find the thing that you can help with. There's usually some little thing that initially a veteran will agree to, whether it's a day sitting in the office so they're not out in the cold, or a sandwich or a toiletry kit, or just the conversation sometimes is what it takes. And you try to use that to build a longer-term relationship to convince a veteran that the solution that you're offering is the right one. And I will suggest to you, Tom, that works fairly well in the outstate. This is the procedure that our folks in Duluth and St. Cloud and Mankato and Rochester use because they can keep better track of the veterans they're dealing with. And so if they go a day or two or a week or two without seeing them, they may eventually come across them again. We've seen times here in the metro area that if the initial outreach doesn't work well, we might not see that veteran again for a year. It's very difficult to build a relationship with someone such that they'll trust you to deal with their most difficult circumstances if you see them once a year at a particular event and then not again until the next time.
So you learn to build that trust, and you learn to try to figure out what is it we need to help him or her change in order to for them to move back into society. General, you've been in the military, as we said, for some 30-some years. In your service, during those years, more and more women served in the military, and more women are serving today than ever. Are there women veterans that are out there homeless as well?
Tom, indeed there are. It is the highest growing population of veterans that we have right now. They're coming out in more numbers as veterans, and so you might suspect that more of them will find themselves homeless. This past year in 2018, one of our focus areas was on women veterans. The registry in Minnesota, we keep a registry of homeless veterans, that those that will agree to have their name added to it. The registry began the start of the year at 17 homeless women veterans. It's currently at 9. During the year, though, the number peaked at over 30, and the lowest point was 6. What that means is throughout the year, we housed 35 homeless women veterans in order to get to the current number that we have today. And we've learned a great deal. We learned about dependent children, housing regulations for children that aren't legally related when the woman veteran is both a mother and a grandmother to that family. We learned how to get a rider for dangerous pets so that a veteran could keep her dog and still be stably housed. And we learned a lot of creative ways to solve transportation problems so that we can take care of the needs specifically of women veterans. And I think that's the way forward for us, is to continue to try to break out subpopulations or subgeographies of the homeless veteran challenge and solve them one at a time.
So they present some different issues and some different challenges.
And indeed they do, and geography does that as well. So over the course of this year, we intend to put our focus on St. Louis County, because most of the northern region of the state of Minnesota has achieved its status as functional zero, and figure out what additional resources we need to help deal with a very challenging population in Duluth that comes to us only when the weather is just so untenable in December, January, and March. And then by April, they're gone again, back in a tent or a shack or a fish house or a hunting cabin near Ely.
We're speaking with Neil Leutholt, President and CEO of MACV, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I know that each year the MACV does a series of stand downs around the state, and there's one in the Twin Cities here, and then you have a number of them around the state. The homeless issue is all across Minnesota, isn't it?
It is. Stand downs are a great tool for us to reach veterans. We bring a lot of resources in, but they don't just solve the problem that particular day. They help us build that relationship, maybe get the right data, maybe create the initial part of the case file so that we can follow up with veterans after the stand down and help them with their particular issues. You know, this year we put a real laser focus on the homeless veterans. All veterans come to the stand down, but the service orientation this year, more so than in the past, was focused on homeless veterans. And with that focus this year, we saw 250 veterans that were not on the registry, that had never sort of been captured, recorded, or found before, that we were able to help out of homelessness. That's the market that I think that stand down should help us find.
And sir, you've got some great partners when you do those stand downs, because the VA provides you some medical personnel in case there's some physical issues. And I know that you've done some medical or you've had some legal help at those things, in addition to all the clothing and the other things that are available at stand down. So you've got some great partners.
We do. The height of some stand downs have almost 90 partners. When we're focused solely on the homeless veteran population, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 partners. Those are people that can provide direct assistance to help a veteran out of homelessness. And in fact, this past December at our stand down at Twin Stadium, we had a dental clinic. Now, I talked to the dentist afterwards, and it was both encouraging and educational, because he said to me, the dentist did, well, we were only able to help 16 people. That's just all we had room for. We were full the whole day. And I said, well, that's 16 veterans that weren't otherwise going to get help. And that's how we solved the problem, one at a time, two at a time, or in this case, 16 at a time. It would have been nice to have a clinic for 300, but it was better to have a clinic for 16 than no dental clinic at all.
And maybe next year you'll get a couple extra dentists, sir.
Or some bigger space, or a change in the regulation, or a lot of other things, Tom, that go into that. But yeah, and we might also find two more dentists that, now that they're aware of the challenge and issue, will put their hand up to help.
Sir, can you ever get to the point where veterans homelessness is done? Can you possibly finish when there might be a new one tomorrow?
Well, I think that the challenge within your question is how we all approach the term finish. So people often ask me that. Well, what do you mean when you say you'll end veteran homelessness? For us, it means that the systems and resources, Tom, are in place to ensure that any veteran experiencing homelessness can quickly be provided resources for housing, and that your episode of homelessness is rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. Right. So if we could get to that, it would allow us to focus on all of the prevention aspects, because even if there wasn't a single homeless veteran today, many of us and many of your listeners, something could happen to you tomorrow or the next day that could put you on a path towards homelessness. And we want to have a system in place that's able to deal with it. So it's not some
stop it before it happens.
Correct. It's not a utopian idea that there will never be homelessness again. It's just that we'll be able to deal with it when it occurs, and we won't have this registry of long-term homeless or homeless that we're not able to affect in time.
Sir, we've got listeners all over the state on 55 different stations. We've got veteran service organizations all over the state. American Legion, VFW have posts all over the state. How can our listeners help with veteran homelessness?
I think the best way that local communities, VSOs, that whole list that you mentioned can help, Tom, is to help take care of the veterans right there in their own community. I'm not a believer that we ought to aggregate all of our veterans here at the top of the system somehow, solve their challenges, and then push them back or put them back into places throughout the state. If the people of Hibbing can solve the challenge for the handful of veterans that they have up there, then we're in better shape. And Hibbing actually did that. The Hibbing United Way of Northeast Minnesota, you know, got a house, and we helped them fix it up, and we have veterans in there now. And now that group from Hibbing doesn't have to travel to Duluth or St. Cloud, where we have existing facilities. They stay right there in their community where their support structures, et cetera, are. And so I had an opportunity here recently with the Legion, and I told them basically that, get your posts to do whatever they can in their area. They don't need to send any money in to me or any other large organization at the top of the system. Understand who's really challenged in your own community and be available to help them. Maybe a lot like the Guard's Yellow Ribbon program.
So, sir, if there's a community out there or a veterans organization or any other organization that wants to try to help in their community, can they reach out to you? Can you show them how to provide that help?
Yeah, absolutely. They can reach out to us. They can reach out to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, where they have a really excellent section of individuals that are focused on this. Andrew Gervais and his team, they have a lot of expertise, and we can help primarily through knowledge, Tom. It's really a powerful thing to know who in your community needs help and how you might help them.
Sir, we're just about out of time. Any last words for our listeners about your mission at MACV?
I think I would just say to the listeners, Tom, help us however you can. I'd like you to help us locally. If that doesn't work, try to help regionally. And if you're not able to do either, then find an organization to participate in, however you participate, financially, with your time, with your other resources. And I think lastly, as I always close, I want to say thank you, Tom. The reach continues. You have great guests. Your guests last week were very educational. And you've done as much as anybody else to educate the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marine, Coasties too, I guess, in Minnesota over so many years. I think somebody mentioned to me it's probably over 300,000 listeners and 452 shows. So thank you very much, Tom Lyons, for everything you do.
Thank you, sir. Just doing as you are, telling these stories. Where's the resources and how we can help? Thanks for joining us today, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Neil Lloyd Holt, President and CEO of the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, normally known as MACV. Please stay back with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to Minnesota Veterans for Veterans and hear about the great things they're doing. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk about the organization Minnesota Veterans for Veterans. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
More than 500,000 Americans have been captured and interned as prisoners of war since the American Revolution. Prisoners of war have bravely endured the loss of the very freedom that they fought to defend at the hands of their captors. We take time to remember and pay respect to the prisoners of war who, through their circumstances of war beyond their control, have been held captive by enemy forces. They have endured one of the greatest challenges one can face, the loss of personal liberty. Let us vow to never forget the sacrifices our prisoners of war and their families have made for our freedom. Their courageous efforts have helped to build strong foundation we have today, which continues to drive us forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said, in this segment, we're going to visit with the Minnesota Veterans for Veterans, and joining me now is the Grant Program Manager, Alex Bachum. Alex, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me again, Tom.
Alex, seems like every year about this time, we have to have Minnesota Veterans for Veterans back on and find out about all the great work they're doing. But there might be some of our listeners that aren't familiar with Minnesota Veterans for Veterans. Can you tell us where did it come from? What's your mission and who are you trying to support?
Sure. So the origin of V4V is pretty interesting. So a long time ago, there was the Big Island Veterans Rest Camp. And then eventually that sort of fell into disrepair. It became a liability, and the veteran service organizations got together and said, what can we do about this? So along with some local partners, the Watershed District, the City of Orono, Gabriel Jabor, a number of folks got together and said, all right, let's, by state statute, let's create this trust fund. And then that trust fund will be from the proceeds of the sale of that island. And that's what's made this trust possible.
So the Minnesota State Legislature took control of the situation and said, you can sell this land, but then we're going to put these funds into this nonprofit and establish your mission and help you understand where they want your board of directors to come from. and then how to use the money.
Yeah, exactly right. So the board of directors is it's two appointees from the American Legion, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, the Disabled American Veterans, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. So two appointees each then comprise this independent board who makes the grant decisions. And really our that is guided by our core belief, which is that every veteran is an asset to society. So from that, we then get our mission, which is to serve those veterans and their families through grants to organizations that help them in their civilian lives.
So you established the mission and you took those funds with the instructions to protect the principal, but to take any earnings from the from those funds and do what with them to benefit veterans?
Yeah, exactly right. So we've now given out in 10 short years, we've given out about $2 million while keeping that corpus intact. And we've given to a variety of programs, but our current focus areas are really about dignity for veterans. So if you think that's like end-of-life care, sort of adult day services, access to quality care, which is really about transportation. So one of the ways that we try to touch every county is through not only helping fund transportation systems, but we also have a veterans transportation program for each county, the last 5,000 of a van or some other mode of transportation to get veterans to and from VA facilities, we'll pitch in that last 5,000. Engaging, educating, and employing, we work a lot with CVSOs. We just recently renewed our joint recreation program up at Camp Ripley and up north. Then veterans in greatest need, and I think we'll have a chance to talk about the Minnesota Military Family Foundation later, but this is really about sort of emergency funding, homelessness. Last year, we did do some grant seed funding for Every Third Saturday, which was also on your program. And then sort of emerging issues. So, that's been everything from HIPAA therapy to dogs to sort of now suicide prevention and intervention.
We're speaking with Alex Bauckham, the Grant Program Manager for Minnesota V4V on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Alex, you work for U.S. Bank, and the board has engaged you in your position as grant program manager to help manage the funds and to help process the grants on behalf of the board, and they meet monthly to review these?
That's right. So, and just so that everybody's aware of the board membership, it's Dean Ashman, Bill Cochran, Don Pancake, Marlon Ronning, and then we've got a couple of new members, Rob Hartley and Larry Zebarth, just recently came onto the board and have been huge assets. Doug Dorfler and Al Holton rounded off.
And you have monthly meetings, and at those meetings, they review the investments. They talk about the mission and the philosophy, who you're going to benefit, and then they start looking at the grant request. Can you share with us who's eligible to put in a grant request? And you kind of went over the things that you want to focus on before. So
right, exactly right. So to find the application, it's mnv4v.org, so mnv4v.org, and it's for organizations that serve veterans. So the way that we're structured, we are not able to give direct assistance, but we find program partners that work and engage directly with veterans, and those that's what our funding goes towards.
Now, the people that want to ask for a grant to help with whatever program they are running, do they need to be nonprofits?
Yes, they do, Tom.
Okay, and then they generally need to fit within one of those categories you're talking about.
Yep, exactly right. There's and the other thing that I would stress is there are a lot of nonprofits out there, but this is specifically tailored for Minnesota veterans and their families. So those are our major criteria.
So can you give us an example of one or two of the grant recipients over the last few years?
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to. So just in this last year, I've already mentioned the transportation program, but we've also had a number of other grants, joint recreation grants. We've funded homelessness programs through Every Third Saturday. We've also done some smaller things, Ship Shop Share, which is a program that the American Legion has, and then also, these little birthday parties that happen at the VA. So we provide the underlying funding so that veterans who are in VA care can still have a sort of an uplifting moment. And then finally, I would just highlight, we've done a number of grants over the last couple of years, both for hospice programs. So that goes back to that dignity piece, as well as adult daycare, which helps really caregivers and families have a little bit of respite while that veteran's still getting quality care.
Alex, I want to dig in just a little bit. I know that you've mentioned the joint recreation program. I think that's up at Camp Ripley, and it's a way to help fund some of the programs that were already going on up there that were supported by Paralyzed Veterans, the Disabled American Veterans, the VFW, the American Legion, where they try to bring in disabled veterans and let them have a chance to hunt and fish and do some other things. Can you tell us just a little bit about what you, how your funds helped?
Yeah, I couldn't really say it better. I mean, this is really, we found that all of these veteran service organizations were looking for ways to collaborate and looking for ways to bring these quality of life opportunities, getting veterans out there, getting them engaged, getting them just together with each other. And I think, Tom, you just recently had a guest that talked about the value of just being active. And that's what we saw. And that's what we saw all of these service organizations trying to do. And we said, all right, we've got some money to make sure that housing isn't an issue. We'll make sure that all of the housing is taken care of for the next few years. And so we put that money down and we just, again, just approved an extension of that program.
I think, Alex, it's pretty easy to understand that if you're a disabled veteran and you're confined to home and you're not moving around much, you get an opportunity once or twice a year to get out and go fishing or just get out and go hunting or just get out with the guys. It's uplifting. It's great for our veterans.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And when you see it, and it's so fun to help make that possible. And we work with so many wonderful organizations, and there's so many here in Minnesota that really they just want to see veterans doing well and having fun. And I just think that's a wonderful thing.
Alex, we just got a few seconds left, but I want to reinforce, I know that you work with the Minnesota County Veteran Service Officers, and you're trying to help them support another organization, another event that the DAV supports to help them get vans to bring veterans back and forth to their medical appointments. County Veteran Service Officers support it. The DAV supports it. The other veteran service organizations are in there. And, of course, we burn up these vans every year. So you're using some of your money to help buy those vans.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I think there's two pieces to that. One is let's make sure that the equipment that veterans are being transported in is high quality. And we have wonderful program partners. The second piece is how do you coordinate that? And so in addition to that last $5,000 of any van for any county veteran service officer, we've also helped facilitate transportation corridors so that the transportation can be more efficient.
Alex, all of these great grants that you've given out, 140 or so in the first 10 years, $2 million, the board has to feel very uplifted by that. And you're sitting here smiling. This has got to be a good job.
Yeah, it's not too bad. You know, don't tell anybody I've got it. So.
Well, you keep helping them and keep handing out those grants. Alex, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Minnesota Veterans for Veterans on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting with Alex Bacham, who is the grant program manager from U.S. Bank, who works closely with the board of directors for the Minnesota Veterans for Veterans. And Alex, would you give that website once again?
Yep, it's mnv4v.org.
And if any of our listeners out there have some activities, have some things going on where they're helping veterans with their families, helping with lifestyle issues, those kind of things, if they're a nonprofit and they want to apply for a grant, they go to your website and there's instructions there on how to fill it out.
Yep, that's exactly right. You'll submit the application and then we'll get you on the calendar as soon as we can.
And we've talked a little bit. You've given out in the first 10 years about 140 grants, totaling about $2 million, and you've still got the corpus of the investment there. And so your board of directors made up of the folks from, you said, DAV, VFW, American Legion, and Purple Hearts.
You got it.
Have done a pretty darn good job of managing those funds and helping a lot of organizations and fulfilling the mandate they got from the state legislature.
Yeah, I really think that we're really starting to see, and as this trust fund continues on into the future, you'll continue to see this impact just continue to build. And I think that's what's really amazing about this. What was sort of a static piece of land has now turned into all of these beneficial ripples. It's something, roughly about 2,000 or so veterans receive benefit each year.
And Alex, in the first segment, you pointed out that the Minnesota Military Family Foundation has been a beneficiary of your grants. We run a big golf tournament where we raise some money, and we raise those funds so that we can handle individual grant requests from Minnesota military families, active duty, guard, and reserve, who are suffering a financial emergency due to service to country. And we've got a very efficient grant request or grant process as well, a little quicker than yours, because they send in the grant request through the Family Assistance Centers. We get them as a board. We vote on them immediately, usually turn them around within an hour or two. But we've had a great partner in Minnesota Veterans for Veterans, because you've helped with that big golf tournament for how many years now?
I think since about 2013. So, yeah. Going on 5 years.
And fortunately, we've got about something over 100 sponsors and partners of that event each year, and everybody gives a little bit, but it adds up to the kind of money that allows the Minnesota Military Family Foundation to give out about 150 grants per year that has been averaging about $350,000 or $400,000 a year for the last 5 or 6 years. So I want to thank you, and I'd like you to thank the board for helping to support Minnesota military families, because we do something that you don't. You give grants to these charitable foundations. We give grants to the Minnesota military families directly, and working together, we've both accomplished our missions.
And I think that's exactly right. So to the extent that we can find organizations like the Minnesota Military Family Foundation that are really, not only are they very, very responsive, which you all are, but in those spaces where we can't grant directly, finding those quality partners that will do it and do it in a way that really has true impact, that's something special. And so it's been our pleasure.
Last quick question. We only got about a minute left. You work closely with the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. You were lucky enough to work with Commissioner Shelato for about 8 years. He's retired, and now Commissioner Herkey is joined, and I think you just met with him recently.
Yeah, we did have a chance to meet with the new commissioner. It was really great. We were able to exchange information. He's taken a lot of stuff in, and it's going to be wonderful to have the commissioner's guidance going forward and helping us make sure that we're staying true to mission and making sure that our grant process remains quality.
So a new commissioner and a couple of new board members, you'll be reviewing all the things that you've done the first 10 years and get ready for the next decade.
That's exactly right. Get down to some good governance and make sure that we're around for a long time.
All right. One more time, Alex, the website?
MNV4V.org.
Go online and check it out. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
It was Alex Bachum, the Grant Program Manager for the Minnesota V4V. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be with you again.
Sergeant Major, I know you've been traveling because you're always in and out and around, and this time of year, this year, I think we've got the 46th anniversary of the Norway Exchange, and is that happening this week?
Yeah, it absolutely is, Tom. It is 46 years that we've had this great exchange with our partners in Norway. And as a matter of fact, I received a report earlier that our Minnesota contingent has arrived in Norway, and we're anxiously awaiting for the contingent from Norway to come here to Minnesota and spend some great quality time up in what we like to call the Jewel of the North, Camp Ripley.
And our contingent usually is about 100 soldiers and airmen headed for a Norwegian home guard camp right next to the city of Hell.
You are absolutely correct. They are in Trondheim, and it is about 100, and it is a combination of both soldiers and airmen, as you described. And they're in for a treat, because having gone through that exchange, it definitely is one of the highlights of my career, and I know it will be of those young soldiers and airmen as well. Well,
we were fortunate enough to go over there 2 years ago and cover that event, and last year we were up at Camp Ripley covering this side of it, and it's amazing how excited our airmen and soldiers get and how excited the Home Guard get about this annual event.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, it's something that we don't normally get to do. And so it's a very highly sought after opportunity. There is a pretty good selection process to make sure that we are sending the right soldiers and airmen onto this event. Because remember, you know, this is about relationships, building partnerships with our partner country, Norway, and we want to make sure that those that we send, and of course, those that they send to us, represent their countries in a positive light.
And the end result here is if we're ever called on to go over there and help, we know these folks, we know the Home Guard people, they know us, we've trained together, and if we ever are called on, it's going to make it easier.
You're exactly right. It's always good to know who you need to be able to count on or who you have to count on in a time of emergency and know them ahead of time and not have to try to pass out business cards, as we like to say, on the scene.
So, Sergeant Major, the Home Guard's up at Camp Ripley, and I understand up at Camp Ripley you've got something called the Court of Honor.
Yeah, we sure do. You know, this isn't something that a lot of people know about. We try to publicize it. It's an annual event where we do an induction into what's called the Court of Honor. And right now we have open application time. Applications will end on the 1st of April. And really what this is for is to recognize individuals of the Minnesota Army National Guard who have distinguished themselves in their service to our organization. And their nomination, their recommendation is based on, or it's on the basis of heroism, distinguished professional achievement and service, again, inside of the Minnesota National Guard. So current members, previously served members, anybody out there who has a tie back to the Minnesota Army National Guard has the opportunity to nominate someone who served us well and then be recognized and have their name etched in stone up at Camp Ripley in the Court of Honor.
So in about 10 seconds, Sergeant Major, how do we nominate someone?
Yeah, so I will push out the web link, but it is an application process that comes before a board, and a board goes through and votes on each packet to make sure they meet all of the criteria.
Very good, Sergeant Major. We're just about out of time for today. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thank you so much, Tom, and you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, sir. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major General Neil Leutholt, Alex Bacham, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about federal premium ammunition and Veterans Day on the Hill. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.